dozen medals?
No.
Not yet. Ready?
I don't know, we'll figure it out. We'll learn.
Okay.
I would not do it, but I mean, what if it melts when you drink melted plastic?
I don't know, it would melt, I never thought about it.
It's not
now
that
you're telling
talk.
Me this, and now I am concerned.
Are you in 12 cakes?
Hello.
I have to leave for Jummah prayer. Today is Friday, Salat. So I will be leaving about 2 p.m.
Okay.
Yeah, till 2 p.m. I am here attending the lecture.
Okay.
So I will go to mosque and center and I will offer the Salat on Friday.
Okay.
It will like take an hour.
I can't read the Lord.
Till 3, I will get free from there.
Okay.
So what about the next session? Will it be online or?
It's online.
Okay. I can attend it. From anywhere,
I will be here, but you can attend. Ah,
so you will be
right.
Providing link or something.
Yeah, you can attend because it will go via the video up there and sound from here. So that's fine. And then she, Mekides, she is via Zoom. Do you understand what I mean?
No.
So I. She will communicate with us via a Zoom link.
Via Zoom link.
So then I have her voice here and the Zoom link, and then this is also streamed.
Yeah.
Ah, you know the okay. I have not posted all the these video links. So these are the videos, you know, I load up of the lecture in Blackboard.
Okay, or I can access that. I will try to be present here during the session.
Yeah.
And if I couldn't, then I can access the recording from Blackboard later.
Yes, or I can also post
the online
the video link or the Zoom link to on Blackboard.
Okay.
I will do that.
Hello.
So I will be back.
Yeah, that's fine. Have you been down the lab otherwise?
Today?
Yeah.
No, I
haven't. To check the SP6.
No, actually I was planning to do, but...
Okay, and I also have no time.
So
I need
on Monday?
I need to check what the error disappears.
If you have time tomorrow, then we can do tomorrow. Sunday or Monday, I'm free.
Monday afternoon. I will be here on Monday afternoon after 1 o'clock.
Okay, then I'll be there.
Where is Tom Zima?
The bus was early for like 5 minutes. Yes. And so I got one.
I wait for Tonsima. I don't know where she is, so I just send a mail. She confirmed on Tuesday, so...
Misunderstanding.
What?
I first.
No, but it was at 1:30, right?
1:15.
Ah, okay, sorry. Oh, I thought 1:30.
No.
sorry about that.
That's fine. That's okay. It's Friday. Should I make a little bit more contrast?
Mm-hmm.
Is it better like that?
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Yeah. I think so.
Okay. But the mic is on and...
Okay.
So.
Yes. Finally.
Have you met the first cohort?
Some of them, yes, but
okay.
Not. I don't know anybody's name, or
okay.
Like not officially.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Then I'm happy to have Tansima here to give a lecture on the spectral reproduction. Is it only spectral reproduction?
It is spectral reproduction, then ICC max. So
ICC max, yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
yes, and we said we were going to skip BRDF.
BRDF, a little bit I will explain, like just an example, but not BRDF thorough. So.
Yes, and maybe you could just briefly introduce you, because you have a kind of a similar background.
Yes, but before that, I would like to know, like in color management, what have they done?
These are experts now in color management.
Okay.
So now they went through the course with Phil.
Okay.
So
color management is done.
Yeah.
ICC profiles. Do you know what are ICC profiles?
Yeah.
Why they are required? Okay, then it's good. Okay. Because ICC Max is the next version of, you can say, a color management architecture that is being used now. And that is ICC version 4. And earlier, if you know, like in ICC, like there were limitations that you cannot encode anything, like any programming inside the ICC profile. But now you can. So this is what I will introduce today. Okay, so I'm Tanzima Habib. I'm a PhD student, and I'm working with color management for elevated printing or 2.5D printing. So first, we will go through spectral reproduction. So, like, why do we need spectral data? What we are trying to do with spectral data? And so this whole process is called basically spectral reproduction. Just a brief idea about how do you acquire such data, then the processing, some use cases, and workflows. Okay. So for spectral reproduction, first, obviously, we need a goal. Like, why do we need to do it? For example, spectral matching. Okay. We like to match colors, right? So for example, we have a certain color, like a spot color, probably the color of that wall, and we measure that, and we have the spectra for that. Suppose that is our target. Now we want to print that using CMYK, but we want that it should be the same. So what should we do? So in that case, it would be great if we can match it spectrally. Then we know that under different illuminance, it will work. So once we have the goal, what we can do is we can acquire this data by using a spectrophotometer. So we have the data, target data. Then we do some processing. The processing is basically your model, okay? How do you match, like, spectral data or data of processed inks or mixed inks to a target data? And then, obviously, you need to apply it somewhere. For example, in a printing workflow. So all these are required for spectral reproduction. So now, why are we doing spectral reproduction now? Because up till now, we were doing it colorimetrically, just using XYZ values or RGB or CMYK values. But now, because we have advanced technology, we can acquire data much faster. So now is the right time that we can actually handle such huge amount of data and actually include it in our color management workflow. So this is why right now we are interested in spectral reproduction. Then, I have already covered this. So we know that advancement in all sorts of technology is basically driving spectral reproduction in our workflows today. There are different spectral acquisition devices. You know hyperspectral device, then multispectral device. So do you know the difference between multispectral and hyperspectral?
About the number of channels?
Yeah, mainly that. So we can choose in which domain we would like to do that. So now we have more channels to work with. That means we have more information. So we can get accurate matching that we could have done with three-channel data. So in spectral processing, basically, we know that our input can be colorimetric, then spectral, which is multispectral or hyperspectral. Okay, but if it is colorimetric, then we will need an intermediate processing where we will do spectral estimation. Okay, and then the output can again be colorimetric or multi-channel or spectral. So spectral reproduction use cases. So now we come to the first use case. That is spot color reproduction. So do you know what is spot color? No. Okay, so spot color is basically a single color, you can say, or a particular pigmented color that you use in one run to create the color. You do not do half toning of using primaries and mixed inks to get that color. Okay, so that is spot color. Obviously, you can mix two different colors and get one color and then use it in one run. So after that, so in spot color, what we do, for example, brand color of Coca-Cola red. So they have a particular red, and if we want to print Coca-Cola red using a printer, then we have to make sure that we match that red. Okay, and under different illuminance. So it is very important that under different illuminance, the printed Coca-Cola red does not change much. The difference has to be very low. Otherwise, we are not successful in printing Coca-Cola red. So that's why spot color reproduction is very important. Then we have printer characterization. You know printer characterization? So there, if we switch inks, do you think that we need to characterize the printer again? Of course, right? Yes. So in printer characterization as well, we can do it using spectral data instead of using colorimetric data so that our accuracy increases. Then we have spectral adjustment for substrate color. And if you have any doubts, you can always ask, like any question. So we have spectral adjustment for substrate color. So now we come to what happens if we print it on a particular substrate that has different white points. Okay, basically, a substrate, a paper can be bluish, yellowish, pinkish, can be anything, right? And when we print color on that, obviously we are adapting to the whole paper and the print. So will we see the same red or same blue that we intended, we would see in a proper white background? And because of the background, it's not just adapting, it is also mixing, right? So what happens? How do we take care of that? Because if we do not take care of the chromatic adaptation that is happening, then the colors on a bluish paper would look very odd to people. So when we print, we do chromatic adaptation before printing, so that they are the appearance of color is not far off from what we intended on a white paper. So this is where spectral adjustment is done, so that the appearance is still similar to if it was printed on a white paper. In that case, again, we do it do that with colorimetric space, where we just use XYZ or, you know, CMYK RGB, and we only do the changes or the adjustment in that space. We have till now not tried doing it in the spectral domain. But as you again know, that we, if we handle this workflow in spectral domain, we will reduce metamerism. And do you know what is metamerism? So we can reduce metamerism if we do it in the spectral domain. So then this is also another important use case where we can actually use spectral processing pipeline to do spectral adjustment, basically. Then data hiding. So data hiding has nothing to do with, you can say, color reproducing, or reproduction of color, but we use data hiding. For example, we would like a watermark on an image, but if we have bigger channels, like instead of just three values of RGB per pixel, if we have something like 31 values for in the case of spectral data, what we can do, we can manipulate this spectral data that will, for example, will show the same color under D50 probably, but under UV, the surrounding pixel might change. But under D50, this it might show like, for example, if you'll see in the blue area of the sky, under D50, all the pixels will show the same blue, but there will be certain pixels where we have embedded the watermark. Under UV light, they will be different from the surrounding pixels. So this is how you can use spectral data and embed watermark, or use it for any other purpose of data hiding where you would want, like in medical imaging, you would like to store patient's data, but you do not want it to be publicly known. So you can hide it there. So this is where, when you have more channels, you can manipulate and without affecting the image much. Then we have scene referred spectral reproduction. So when we say scene referred, basically we mean that in real world we have a scene, particular scene, and there are trees, and we would like to reproduce the same color of the tree in our image, basically, in our using our image pipeline. Normally, what we do in photography or any other imaging, that we develop an algorithm that is perceptually appealing, not true to the scene, but it is perceptually appealing. But in scene referred, we would like to be true to the scene. We do not care if it is perceptually, if it looks nice, the scenery that we are actually digitally creating. So in this case, again, when you want a scene referred spectral reproduction, if you have spectral data, then you can try to mimic that using your ink colors or even RGB values of a display, and so that it is as close as possible to the real. Obviously, the gamut of display or printing is smaller than the real world, but at least you can get closer to the real. Then next workflow is high fidelity color reproduction, which is similar to scene referred in a sense that we are trying to keep the color reproduction as close as to the real scene. And this is very important in medical imaging, because if we lose a real color information, then there might be problem in diagnosis, because the it might be confusing to the doctor when they look at an image of an area of some organ, and they want to do their analysis based on that image. So it is very important to do color reproduction as close as possible and retain the quality as close to the real scene. So in this case, multispectral data or spectral data becomes very important, because then we have more information and we can create better quality images. Also, if we have the spectral data, that can also tell certain characteristics from this spectral data can be extracted to quantify certain diseases. So it not only enhances the image quality, but also it based on the characteristics of the spectral data, you can also quantify diseases. So the next use case would be spectral BRDF to render synthetic images. Do you know what is BRDF? Any idea? Okay.
It has not been specifically addressed yet,
right,
in that course.
Okay. So BRDF is basically, so we have a object, okay? So light falls from one direction, and we observe. So for me, the light is falling on this table, and I'm observing from here. So we all are observing probably the same scene from different angles, and light is also falling with respect to your view and the object here at different angle. So if this area is our object, and if we know from where the light is falling and from where the person is viewing, we can recreate that appearance for that particular, you can say, configuration, okay? And so for that, what do we need is this particular area. We need for that view all the light angles, like all the, if the light is falling here, we capture in a particular view, okay? And we get the whole, that capture of all the color appearance, whether it is in colorimetric domain or in spectral domain, doesn't matter. But that capture in all the different direction of incident light is basically called BRDF. So we have a BRDF of which is basically bidirectional reflection distribution function. Okay. So once we have that, we can create a model based on this data that we have acquired. And so once we have the model parameters, now depending on how we change our view, we can recreate the surface of this material or object. Okay, so that is what is BRDF, and it is very interesting because even in computer graphics or animation, they're using basically the idea of how light reacts with an object and how we view it from different angles, using exploiting that knowledge to create synthetic objects. Creating a real scene where light is interacting with the object. Okay.
So what about if we would live in a completely Lambertian world?
Mm-hmm. There will be no specular.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So then it wouldn't be necessary to deal with BRDF, or basically one incident.
No, BRDF, yeah. Incident angle will still matter because the light changes, the diffuse color of an object depends on the angle of the light. So if the light falls directly, we'll see the brightest. And if it is at an angle, so depending on what the angle is, there is an attenuation of the amount of light that is falling on the surface. And so we will see the diffuse color getting darker and darker.
Right.
So. Yeah, but specularity. So specularity will be any shininess that you see. The Yeah. So if it is Lambertian, as Peter says, then obviously we will not see specularity. So in that case, our view from which angle we are looking at an object will not matter, because the diffuse color of an object only depends on the angle of the light and not from where we look at it. But the specularity will change depending on what we are looking at. So if we are looking at, if you see a shiny object, the shine, the specular point will start to move depending on your view.
Do you remember this round calibration tile Phil was using in the bunker room? So that is kind of considered as a Lambertian property. So wherever you were standing in the bunker room, then appearance-wise it did look exactly the same.
Yeah, in real life, obviously we do not have a perfect diffuser. We can only accept it as the perfect diffuser. So yeah, so BRDF earlier, like it's even now, like computer graphics community, they just use RGB values to do that, and they use like physically based rendering where they synthetically create the data set they require using physics. So they are not really acquiring the data with camera or with spectrophotometer. They are they have obviously like a small amount of data that they would try to at least match, but overall they're doing it with synthetic light and using physics basically. But in our research, we do it as accurately possible to the real measurements. So we measure spectral data, like our spectral BRDF. So basically you have an object, then there will be a spectrophotometer, which is basically the human vision, you can say, the view. And the light, we will have a light source which will keep moving over a hemisphere. And even your detection will move, so the angle between the view and the light, we will try to capture at all the possible angles, but like we will sample it depending on that. And once we have that BRDF, then we can fit it to a model, BRDF model, and get the parameters and use that parameters to generate an image. And if we have normal maps for a particular image, so since we know like we have the normal, we know with respect to the light that is globally falling and also the global view, for particular normal, we can calculate the angles again, like what is the light angle for that particular point, and use this data and the BRDF parameters to find what will be the color appearance when the light and the view is at this angle. So for each pixel, if we do that, we will get a textured image. Okay. So the last use case is the simplest one, where we try to minimize metamerism under different illuminance. Okay. Here, what we would like is that we have the spectral data, the target, and we have the estimated spectral data. Now, we know that when we combine inks, many different combinations can lead to the same color. Okay, we can get probably a purple with different combinations of inks. So which one do we choose? Like which combination do we choose to recreate that purple? Now suppose if we create this spectral data for each of these combinations and now calculate the tri-stimulus values under different illuminance using this. And also we have the target spectra, and if of a spot color or like the from the real scene, and if we calculate the tristimulus values under different illuminance using that spectral data and find the minimum delta E under different illuminance for the combination of inks. And we will use that combination of ink because it will give us the least error under different illuminance. Okay? So that is where, again, to minimize metamerism, spectral estimation of process inks become important. So these are some of the use cases, especially, I will say, in the color management domain, where we would like to use spectral data, process it in a workflow. Okay. So here, I already described this. So this is the spectral proofing workflow, where, as I said, that we have the process inks and we get the spectral estimated data. We have the target and we try to minimize metamerism over a set of illuminance. Okay. And here, there is an example of a BRDF workflow in color management. So BRDF in color management is quite new, so there are not many examples. This is one of the problem I'm working on. So again, we can have colorimetric input or spectral input, and we use that, okay? And the orange block in the middle, if you'll see, there is the ICC profile which has the BRDF encoding. So here, basically, we have the BRDF model. The parameters are basically the input, okay? Or and once we have that input, we can basically output the image depending on the normal map that we have used and the model we have used, okay, per pixel. And we can recreate a more realistic scene or object surface. And here are some of the metrics or quality metrics that we can use to assess our spectral reproduction workflows. Because whenever we create a model or we create a workflow, we have to assess it, how good our workflow is actually doing compared to a test data set, okay, or a target. So obviously the first one would be color difference, but color difference can be calculated only in the colorimetric domain, right? So apart from color difference, that we can use root mean square error, where we can actually assess spectral data itself. Goodness of fit coefficient also works on spectral data. Then smoothness value, this smoothness metric, that also works on spectral data, where we try to find out how smooth our spectrally estimated data is. Because naturally, natural reflectance data is always smooth. But when we do spectral estimation, there will definitely be noise, and it can be spiky depending on how we are doing it. So it is important to smoothen our spectra. So it is very important to assess the smoothness of the estimated spectra versus the smoothness of the target spectra. So how close we are to that. Then, obviously, metamerism index to find out, apart from color difference, again, this works in the colorimetric domain, that under different illuminant, how well your estimated spectra is doing close to the target. Then spectral metamerism index. So a spectral metamerism index is a special index that works in the spectral domain, okay? And then color inconstancy. So color inconstancy is basically an object. You take an object, find out the color under D50, find out the color under D65. The difference between these two colors is that particular object's color inconstancy. Okay, so so when we are creating our own reflectance for the same object, does our spectra also show the same inconstant behavior in color for this object? So that will also matter. And hue constancy, that the hue change is constant or not, similar to color inconstancy. In color, you basically take the all the values, hue, your saturation, your luminance values, everything together. But in hue, you are only concentrating on hue, because hue is the most important factor when it comes to appearance and how we think about objects. If we can match the hue, even if we do not match the luminance or any other characteristics, we will, human beings will still accept it. But if the hue is different, then we will know something is weird. Okay, we'll spot it out. So that, then that's why hue constancy, maintaining that, is important. And then spectral comparison index. So this is a very interesting metric developed by Vigiano. So in this spectral comparison index, it uses the knowledge of both spectral data and the colorimetric knowledge, and then gives you the output. So it is a combination of both, and it's not purely a spectral metric, and it is very good index when we do spectral matching, because we not just want to match it in the spectral domain, but we would also like colorimetrically how it works. So this is the end of this first lecture. Do you have any questions regarding anything? So we can take a break.
Just a comment on the last metric.
Yeah.
Where you compare kind of the spectral properties and the quality metric.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
and so on.
Right.
So is there a kind of, what is the word for, or is it assumed that
so, yeah.
It's going to be 50?
No, it can be in any, under any illuminant. It just, but yes, there is this limitation that which LAB values we are using. So because that will depend on the illuminant. And so normally D50 or D65 is used because that is closer to daylight. And so this in this metric, basically it is the difference between the target spectra and the estimated spectra. And that is integrated over the LAB values. Yeah. So the it's because sometimes even if we match spectrally, but that spectral match might lose some aspects, important aspects of colorimetry. Yeah. So basically, if we because the spectra. For example, in the higher wavelengths, it matches, but maybe lower wavelength, it doesn't. But overall, the result is good. We will consider it as a good spectral match. But then if when in colorimetric domain, if, you know, blue is, like, more sensitive, and if we want the blue hue to be constant, okay, but we are losing that because our estimation process is not taking that into it. Count. So
you mentioned that it's integrated in over. I didn't get that part.
So
what do you mean by integrated?
Integrated means basically summed up. Okay.
Okay.
So you have your spectral data
mm-hmm.
For one sample. So this metric, you calculate for over a set of samples, so that overall for the data set, how your workflow is working. So you have your estimated spectra and the target spectra for a test set, okay? And so it has like 31 channels, for example, right? So you will get 31 values. And that you basically add it up and also multiply to the LAB. And that will go on for all the sets of... So, and the LAB is also the difference of between the two. Yeah. So everything is basically in summing up the differences for different samples and also the reflectance data.
Should we meet again at 10 past 2?
10? Yeah.
10 past 2?
Yeah.
Okay.
This class is until 3 o'clock or 3:30.
3 o'clock.
Normal. Okay. So one
the,
more.
The class hour is always 1:15 until full hour, and then 15 minutes break. That is the kind of the structure. So then today at 3:15, I hook up with Makidis on HDR from RIT.
Yeah. Okay. Are you working with her? Or?
No, not in, not specific, but sure, she gave a talk last year and 2 years back because HDR, that's kind of...
So she will also take a class lecture for...
Online, yeah, because for her it's in the morning.
Therefore
we decided, because normally we have classes in the morning, and then for her it would be, you know, 3 or 4 or 2 o'clock in the morning. So then we decided, okay, let's have it in the afternoon. And then for you it's, I don't know, 9 o'clock or so. So we have it on Friday. Normally it's Tuesday and Wednesday. I go quick now to the lab.
I'm comparing different techniques for the imaging of fluorescent proteins in organelles.
Standing technique because I don't want to sit.
Fair enough. That's a good reason to be standing.
Different methods for fluoroscopy or fluorescent microscopy.
And just to see which methods are for everything.
They're both kind of like pretty. The one is like multispectral imaging. I think like the major points of comparison I'm going to raise are the method that does the multispectral imaging is like pretty computationally heavy, while the other one isn't really, but the multispectral one can like simultaneously image more of the fluid pores. So just little pros, little cons, wrap it all up in the bow.
It was all 3 pages, but
oh, the whole thing?
Yeah.
How do you guys come up with this topic? How do you guys come up with this?
strawberries and you can measure the amount of sugar in the strawberry just with a spectral imaging. So I thought if you can measure the sugar in the strawberry, you can also do it the same in the grapes. And it means that you can classify the grapes based on how much sugar they have to produce different kinds of points based on the amount of sugar.
So the literature may be about classifying grapes?
Yeah.
How much work has been done on classifying grapes?
Maybe two or three.
Yeah, there is something. Yeah, there is work on it.
The fewer, the better,
the
because you have, you know, less to be
so
taken into.
I think I just picked a very broad topic.
Which
is all of yours is like very narrow and specific.
No, this is not specific actually, because Peter is asking me for something specific that I want to do. But I don't know what is specific for him.
You want to make it even more specific.
What is important in wine industry?
I don't have an answer.
I don't look for it. I mean,
there are many factors.
There are factors.
Even the kind.
Yeah, that was also, that's also my problem. I'm just literally like specifying it more. And
yes,
like,
I don't know.
Narrow it down to the niche of the niche of the niche of the problem.
I have to make the research already.
I need to find out.
Yeah.
No,
he doesn't have a visa for like 3 months within the year later that we're talking about. Ah, you see? Yeah, she just has a point.
Ali.
It's funny, it's very much. Ali didn't give me anything. If you're ready, you just review. Why not?
No, it's like a visa that you would or would not come. And I have one extra if you guys are not coming. You said that like you were not.
Yeah, but you have
one. If I find a substitution for you, and then
I
will check.
Yeah, but just let me know if you can.
I will.
Someone who has the monkey last question. Thank you.
I got the tickets. You got the tickets. Sorry, I
didn't know. Do you have the bus pass in your card or the app?
In the card.
So, shall we start? Have you done cross-media color reproduction? Yeah.
We are trying.
So, have you tried applying ICC profiles? Yes?
No.
Okay. All right. So you know what ICC profiles are and how we can characterize a device and, you know, we can use it to reproduce color accurate or color constant images. So even for all of our laptops, there are ICC profiles inbuilt, right? And because my laptop will reproduce color differently from any of yours. And so we need to model it to an color independent, sorry, device independent color space, which is basically, you can say XYZ or LAB, right? Okay, so now we come to the application side, not understanding use cases of color management, but understanding how we can create these ICC profiles, the programming side of it, okay? So in ICC version 4, the limitations were that the white point always has to be D50. No, I have not changed it yet.
Okay,
yeah, I'm still discussing. Okay, I have not changed it yet. So D50 illuminant we have to use. So that is a constraint, and also we cannot program inside the ICC profile. We create our curves or lookup tables, and we just place it inside the ICC profile, right? But we cannot dynamically handle anything else inside the ICC profile. So this is where ICC Max, the new color management architecture, comes in handy, that it now allows us to change illuminant, to take any illuminant inside the ICC profile. It also allows us that the PCS now, the profile connection space, earlier it can be only LAB or XYZ, but now it can be spectral data, multispectral data, or apart from just being colorimetric. And the most important improvement is that now we can do programming inside an ICC profile. To do the programming, ICC color management uses something called calculator elements, okay? So these are some important documents which you can find online. So ICC Max specification, this document basically tells you how to use ICC Max, what are the commands available, how to basically encode it in an XML file. And then there are ICC tools which you must have used that converts XML to ICC. And then there is another tool that you use to apply the profile to your image or to your object, basically. In this lecture, I will specifically talk about the programming inside ICC Max using calculator element script programming. Okay, so it is a stack-based programming model. Do you all know what a stack is? Okay, so basically a stack, it's a data structure, you can say, okay, where you can store or utilize data using that, okay? But in this structure, it follows a pattern called last in, first out. So first, if you are storing, suppose, 1, so it will go to the bottom of the stack, then 2, it will go to the top of the stack, and then 3, then again top of the stack. So if you are taking out data, then it will come from the top again. So then it will be like 3, 2, 1. Okay, that is how you can access a stack. So it is a stack-based programming. So when you do programming in this, you have to keep in mind what will come out first and what will, you know. So accordingly, because you are constrained to use it like that. Then it also uses postfix notation. Basically, the operands come before the operators, okay? So if you want to do 1 plus 2, you cannot write 1 plus 2, like in a high-level programming language, okay? You have to write 1, 2, the operands first, and then plus. So this is the notation it follows. And it has to be encapsulated in the XML file under a tag called multi-processing element. And under this structure, you can use the calculator element tag and do your programming, basically. So this is a low-level scripting language. Basically, it is when you read it, it is not as understandable as high-level programming. And it uses 32-bit depth. Okay. So the simple operations would be, take data off the stack or into the stack. So this stack is basically the execution part where you do your calculations and you get your results. Okay. There are, I'll directly go to the next. So this is the XML representation. So you can see multiprocess elements. That is the tag which is required to utilize calculator element programming. And then we can have other elements, something called sub-elements. So for example, sub-elements can be matrix. So if you want to use a matrix or a matrix data, then you have to create a sub-element, and inside that you have to use matrix tag and then use or store your matrix data there. And then when inside your calculator element programming, inside your code you want to access the matrix data, you can just call the name of the matrix. Okay. So these are sub-elements, like... Then you can also store your curve data. So any data you are storing becomes a sub-elements. Okay. So here is how this programming language works inside your ICC profile. Okay. So the main function is where you program, and you always apply your ICC profile to a file that stores the data, right? It can be an image or it can be a text file. Text file of, for example, of colorimetric data, right? So this file which stores the data on which you are applying your ICC profile has the channels, right? The RGB channels pixel-wise. So this one pixel would be your input channel, okay? So if it is RGB, then your input channel is 3, size of 3, right? So the input IN will always store the value of from your file, okay, input file. Then tput is a command that will take a value from the stack and put it in memory, okay? So there is memory you can define where you can store the value from the stack, and so that you can use it later for it, depending on how you are creating your algorithm. And so tput 0, so 0 is basically the size. So if you write 2, then it will take the last 2 elements from the stack and put it in the memory, okay? And so here, if you see, input channel is 1, 3, 4. On the left, you can see 1, 3, 4. And that, since it is the input channel, so since we have used the command in 0, 3, in the execution stack, you can see that 1, 3, 4 are in the stack right now, right? Then we do tput command. So tput, what it has done, since it is 0, so 0 is the first index, so it takes the value from the top of the stack and puts it into the memory block in index 0, okay? So now we have 4 taken out of the temporary memory block. Then next line, if you'll see, it is 2, 2. Okay, so whenever you write just a number, basically it is pushing something, a value, to the stack. So since there are two twos, so two twos are being pushed onto the stack, and then mul2 is basically your multiplication command, where the two inside the bracket defines that multiplication will be done in sequence, okay? So the first two or the top two values onto the stack will be multiplied to the next two, okay? So it was 2, 2, 3, 1. So now after the multiplication, it becomes 6, 2. So this is how you have to think if you have to, you know, program in calculator elements programming for ICC profiles. So tget is basically getting something from the memory to the stack. So it was 4 at index 0. So we are taking that value on, and putting onto the stack. And then out 3, so there were 3 values, so we are outputting, putting all the 3 values. That will be your result, basically. And it will be stored as an image or as a text file, depending on what input file you have used. So there are different types of operation encodings. So we have already discussed this in general. So floating point constant operation, basically pushing any constant value onto the stack. Then channel vector operations, so tput and tget that we discussed. These are all channel vector operations, okay, where you take something from the stack and put it onto the memory block or from memory block to execution stack. Then we have environment variables. So environment variables, what we can do is at the runtime, okay, we can supply environment variables with variable name that the ICC profile can utilize within its code block and call these variables. And whatever value was, you know, stored in this variable can then be used inside your code. So this is where this env environment variable operation comes in handy. So using this env, you can call the environment variable that you were sending it during runtime. Then these are the sub-element invocation operations, where basically you have the sub-elements, for example, curve set element, which is basically storing your curve. So you can use a file where you actually define and store your elements, be it matrix or curves, and then you give a name to that, and you can use these inside your code by calling these operations. For example, for curve set, you use curve, and then use the name of the element that you are calling, that you are applying, basically. And MTX is basically, again, for matrix multiplication. So you call this operation when you want to do matrix operation using a matrix that you have stored as a sub-element, okay? And these operations will be applied to the values that are stored in the execution stack already. So these are other stack operations. For example, copy. It will copy the two values because it is copy two. And then if you do pop one, then it will pop one element from your stack. And if you do flip, it will flip the number of elements that is mentioned in the operation. Then we have, we already discussed sequence. We already discussed this, like for example, multiplication, mul2, where you are basically saying that the first two sequence will be multiplied to the next two sequence of values in the execution stack. But in sequence functional operations, what happens, for example, prod, that is product, and then you give the number, like how many elements will be multiplied. So if it is prod 1, then these two elements, the next two elements will be multiplied together. So, and sum 1, so it will be 4. Then if we do prod, then it is multiplied altogether. So you basically need to understand how different operations work, what they mean, and how to utilize it inside your code block to achieve a certain goal. You can also have conditional operations where basically if then else and greater than all these conditional statements. And again, you have to make sure that you use it in a postfix notation, okay? So you have your first input channel, and then you have the operand, and then you have your operator. And if that is true, then it will go inside the braces where you have your command that will follow if the condition is true. Then you can also create macros. Macros we use to make the code look cleaner. So instead of writing everything inside the same code block, you can choose to have macros outside which you can call to do a certain function. So for example, a simple addition, and you are using it repeatedly in your, for example, repeatedly in your code. So some that kind of operations, you can always define it outside, and you just call the name of that macro, and that particular function will be executed, okay? Now we come to an example of spectral estimation, how we can do it inside an ICC profile, okay? So here we have principal component analysis, spectral estimation. So PCA estimate, spectral estimation. So forget about this long equation. Just think about matrix multiplication, where y equals to mx, okay? So basically this is what I'm doing. It is just that it has more terms to do the same matrix multiplication, okay? So if you will see this whole until this bracket, I don't know if you can see my mouse, okay, mouse pointer. So until this bracket to here can be regarded as x, this is your m, and this is your y. And here there is a term that we are adding to this whole thing. So basically we want to use this equation inside our ICC profile so that we can, so R is here is reflectance value. E naught is your average XYZ value. And here A is the combination of XY, your color matching functions multiplied to your illuminant. So you know how XYZ values are calculated, right? Yeah, so it is reflectance multiplied to your CMF multiplied to your illuminant, right? So we are doing the same thing, but it's because we want to estimate spectra from XYZ, okay? From XYZ, we want to estimate the spectra. Okay, so this T is basically your input tri-stimulus value using which you are trying to find the estimated reflectance R on the left side, okay? So this is how we can exploit PCA to do our estimation. We have our input tri-stimulus value, and from it we see, basically subtract the average tri-stimulus value of the whole image. Okay, so this ATE naught is basically your average tri-stimulus value, and E naught is your average reflectance data. Okay, and also I did not mention that to do this you should have a training data set, right? Training reflectance data set. So this E naught is basically average of that training reflectance data set. And once we have the regression values ready, we can use this and apply on a test XYZ to get the reflectance data on a, and then and basically the training data is not same as your test data or where you are applying, but you should always choose training data which is closely representative of the tri-stimulus data that you are trying to estimate the reflectance for. For example, if you are trying to estimate reflectance for a printed chart, then you should have training data set of print of a printed chart. Okay? You cannot just use like a random red color from the, you know, from nature or from anything else, or textile red or green or blue, and take that spare training data to do the estimation, because training data is basically holds the characteristic of the spectral estimation that data that you want. Okay. So, and here if you see these two, so what is happening is we are doing something called pseudo-inverse, okay, where we can inverse a matrix when it is a square matrix and it is non-singular, right? Basically, the determinant is not zero. But in this case, we know that our matrix are normally, matrix is normally, it's tri-stimulus values, three, and the number of tri-stimulus values, right? It is three cross, you can say, whatever number of. So it is not a square matrix. Or so what do you do? In that case, you can use something called pseudo-inverse, okay, where you multiply another matrix in such a way that it's not a perfect inversion, but it is because you will lose some information doing pseudo-inverse, but it is still a good inverse for that particular matrix. So here we are doing pseudo-inverse until here, and we get the matrix inversion, and we multiply it to the principal component. And principal component is basically calculating eigenvectors for the training data set, okay? And the eigenvectors, the first eigenvector will hold the most information of the training data set, okay? So in this case, since we are dealing with three-dimensional data like X, Y, Z, okay, we use three principal components. Then it is easier for us to multiply the principal components of the training data. So the principal component, since it is applied to the training data set with the number of wavelengths, right? So the, each principal component will also have that many channels, right? So imagine if we use three principal components. So that matrix will be three across the number of wavelengths, right? And that if we multiply to our tri-stimulus value matrix, the inverse matrix, then we will get that tri-stimulus values in the wavelength domain, right? So that is how we can get an estimated reflectance. And this will obviously not be a perfect estimation of the spectral data, but since we are using principal components, it will have a close characteristic match to the spectral data. So this equation, now our job is to encode it inside the ICC profile so that when you apply this ICC profile to a RGB or XYZ data, the output should be that for each pixel we get the spectral estimated spectra. Okay, so we are converting something that we have in colorimetric domain to spectral domain. So to do that, this is how you can achieve it. Basically, the operations that you have to apply it inside the calculator elements programming. But then there are certain issues that you cannot do this whole equation directly inside the ICC profile because, for example, this inverse of a matrix, okay, it is very difficult to do inside a ICC profile because we are not provided any function or any operation that will easily do the inverse of a matrix. And here we are using very huge data, right? So there is a solve operation, but it only works with vectors and not matrices. So matrix inversion is very difficult because otherwise you have to do vector-wise, and suppose you have like 40 such operations to do, then you have to write 40 times. So normally what we do is these bigger matrix operations, we do it outside, and then we import that data. For example, if you see AV0 and V0, so V is basically substituted for E in this case, okay? So all this we have already pre-calculated, kept in a sub-element of matrix, okay? So we have defined that matrix, and we are directly calling that matrix inside the ICC profile. And that can be stored as a different file, import file, and if you need to change, because your training data has changed, so these values will change, you can just change it in that file, and you do not really need to do anything with your ICC profile. So when your ICC profile, you will just compile it once more, and then it will use new data. Okay? So this, so you can see this tri-stimulus value, okay? To get this tri-stimulus value, because we are using an RGB file, okay? So it starts from RGB input, then it pixel-wise applies a gamma function to the RGB value, and then apply the RGB to XYZ matrix, okay? So just to get the tri-stimulus values, we have to do all these steps to get the XYZ. And then we apply the matrix AV0 to what we have in the stack right now, okay? And then we do follow this subtraction here, and then we, so depending on how your equation is, you will do the subtraction or multiplication. But the bigger matrix calculations should already be calculated and stored, so you cannot handle it inside. So these are certain limitations, yeah. And so the problem here is it cannot do loops, right? So it has to be just like regression analysis. Just you can change this equation. You can use third order polynomial or anything else, any other matrix, but you cannot do an optimization loop here, right? Because it's very static in that sense. So you have to get the final parameters and then utilize inside. But you cannot optimize and find the parameters. And then, yeah, once we have the reflectance values in the stack, then we can output it in the end. So this is how we can use ICC Max, the new color management, to do spectral estimation. with certain limitations. So this is how your text file result will look. So have you applied ICC profile to text files? Notepad, yeah. So you store your data there, and then you apply ICC profile. And so you use this, you call this, right, ICC apply name CMM, this tool. And then you have this text data, the next command. So then you have this text data. Yeah, no. XML is where you are. You use to make your ICC profile, but you apply your ICC profile.
The only case that we applied was through Photoshop.
Okay. So you have not used this ICC tool. Okay, so yeah, XML file is basically your encoding the ICC, like you're coding it, right? And then you compile and get the ICC profile, right? .icc file it will be. So now you want to apply it. So you can apply it to images, like TIFF files, or you can apply to text files, which store your XYZ or RGB, your color metric or spectral data, right? So there is a way to define these text files, basically. So in this case, if you see the first command, so I'm using this ICC apply name CMM. This is a tool, a color management tool, which you can use to apply ICC profiles to specifically to text data. Okay, this you can do not use for image data. And here, in the text date file, you will have your, we are doing estimation from RGB data, I will have my RGB data in this text file, and then this is my ICC profile that I have created for spectral estimation. And when I apply this, this is our result, that it will create a text file, and the text file will look like this, where NC001F is basically the number of channels that your output should have, okay? And it is in floating point. And the source data, you can see it is RGB, and it's 8-bit RGB. And after that, here this, after all this description is done, here you can see until this semicolon here, this is basically your reflectance data that you get, okay? For this particular RGB value, after the semicolon, that is the source RGB value or your input RGB value. For that, this profile has given you this spectral data, basically, the reflectance. Okay, this is how it will show you. You can also apply it to images. So I applied it to, have you seen this cow image? No? At some point, probably Phil will. Yeah. So so we have this RGB data of many cows. Okay. And so this was created by RIT. So actually, it was the other way around, where they captured the spectral data of this particular image. Okay, and each cow is basically under certain illuminant, some cows will match. Under certain illuminant, some cows will not match. Okay, so they have metameric differences.
I think the cows are split, divided, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, half and half, right.
Yeah.
So this spectral data, if you use illuminant D50, for example, you will see for the same cow, you will see difference under D50. Maybe under D60 you might not see the difference, but under D50. So they created this, like, half and half of the cow is using different spectral data and half is using different spectral data. Okay. So in my case, I did the opposite since I'm doing spectral estimation. So I used the RGB image of the cow image, and then I applied my ICC profile, and then I got spectral data for this particular RGB image. And spectral estimation will also depend on the RGB values you have, and that depends on the illuminant and the CMF that you have used. So this spectral estimation is dependent on what data, what colorimetric data you're using. It will slightly change if I use RGB data that followed D50. Okay, so it will be mostly accurate. So if I use my starting colorimetric data for a particular CMF and a particular illuminant, and then I apply my reflectance value, my spectral estimation, and I get my reflectance, and I do the same thing with D50, the reflectances will have little dissimilarity. So but in ideal case, the reflectance should not change, right? Because the target reflectance is just one. So these differences, if we can minimize, and then we will have a perfect spectral estimation, basically.
There you go. In the previous slide, so where do you define the frequency? Whether you have 1 nanometer or 10 or 5 nanometers? I saw it. It's 31.
31. Yeah.
Okay.
So. But when you, I will just show you one whole.
And that goes from 380 to 730?
Yes. So actually, you do not define exactly the range because the ICC profile doesn't. Okay, so I was trying to show a file, actually. I was not showing slides. I think that's why it did not work.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So if I change to just showing a file, it's not basically replicating my desktop. Anyway, like, I don't... Can I show my file or like show my screen?
So is that now presented view? So if you leave the presented view. Escape or something.
Okay. Escape presenter view. No.
So now you have to save on the screen, hold on, and on your laptop.
Yeah, I cannot find, like, it only lets me hide or show presenter view. But it doesn't allow me to share my screen, basically.
So is that a PDF or?
Yeah, it's an XML file. Okay, anyway, I can just tell you about it. So basically, since you all have already created a XML files for ICC profiles, so you know they have this header, right? So in the header, the source and destination channels have to be mentioned, right? So if it is XYZ, then the it will be 3. And if it is spectral data, then you have to specially mention how many channels in the header. And that tells you. And if there is a mismatch in your output-input to the source and destination channel values, then it will show an error. Yeah. So similarly, you can also encode BRDF data. How much time do I have? Okay, 5 minutes. The problem is I cannot show. Okay. Let me see if I have in the last slide.
Oh, okay. So that is that and that is the same, but you have, okay.
Okay, I can show this slide. Yeah.
That's strange. Okay.
Okay. So similarly, you can also encode a BRDF model inside ICC profile. So here, the optimization of the BRDF data is already done. And for a particular BRDF model, we already have the parameters ready. And what we are doing is we are just encoding the model inside the ICC profile, and the parameters will be your input, right? For depending on each pixel, the parameters will change, and those parameters, when used along with a normal map encoded with ICC profile, you will get the color appearance for different pixels depending on how the light and view is changing for that local point. Okay, so you can encode that, and so in GIST, what you will get is you have your BRDF parameters as a TIFF file for each pixel, and then you apply your ICC profile. So this workflow I created for BRDF, where you're using a multiplex identification profile, MID profile here, and then multiplex visualization profile, and then you get the tri-stimulus values at a given geometry for each pixel. And that geometry depends on the normal map that you use for that surface, right? So your input would look something like this, okay? XYZ values, and for these XYZ values, we can have the respective BRDF parameters. And once we apply this whole thing, so for different output, they are for different global illumination and view. So 45.0, 45.20, and 60.20, how locally they change and change the pixels depending on the normal map. So this is what you can achieve. And yeah, so any questions? So I had more examples, but it's just that I did not paste it on my slides. I can just show you one last thing. Okay. So using this normal map for this and for each color strip that you see, we know the BRDF parameters for each of those colors, okay? And using the workflow that I showed, you can get an output like this, where without the normal map, there is no texture, there is no variation, but applying BRDF model with a normal map, you can get an output something like this, depending on what illumination angle and viewing angle you input. Yeah. So yeah.
Okay.
So
on the right, that is
normal map. Yeah, so that is the normal map.
Normal map.
Yeah, so that will tell you for each pixel what is the value of the normal to the surface.
Okay, very good. Questions? Is that a little bit kind of advanced compared to traditional trichromatic?
What do you think about color management or cross-media color reproduction?
Oh, don't. No, but I think in general you adapt kind of to the flow and to the language and to the content. Huh? I mean, you're not the first one.
Yeah. I also did COSY at one point of time.
No, I mean it's if you do not have any color background at all, and perhaps a little image processing, then this is a kind of really new land.
New, and
it takes some time to grasp and to adapt.
Yes,
and
definitely. Yes, but color science has already been covered.
Yeah, so there were a couple of hours kind of crash course.
Okay, so it's everything is crash.
Yeah, to some extent, I think it is expected that the students should have kind of imaging type of background.
Yeah.
Some foundations.
Yeah, so
that is very subjective, you know. So
yeah.
But we have managed before, and we will manage now, so it's fine.
Yeah. If you have any questions or anything, you can always mail me. I'll provide Peter my email address.